Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. This is take two on a failed podcast.
What happened? You pushed the wrong button?
I accidentally stopped it and when you were in the middle of an interesting point. And we don't know how to join two podcasts to get two sound recordings together, so
yeah.
I guess we're going to start over. And we're having an internal disagreement about what day to do this podcast. Like, you want to do it on Tuesday. If we could, what we should do is tape something tomorrow and put it up next Monday.
Yeah, but see, that never works because we are like on the cusp of commentary on breaking news and things that happen. So, like, we could be talking about something on Tuesday, but then by the time next week rolls around, it's like, it's old news. Nobody wants to hear it. So,
you think people?
We're one of the first people come to when they want to hear about like commentary on breaking news. So.
Except we
can't afford to be behind the curve.
We don't ever talk about any breaking news.
Like, no, we do. We talk like when things happen. We talk, you know. So, like if today we're talking about like I don't know the Ukraine and Russia. I mean, by next week, it could be totally over, and Ukraine could be no more, and then the old news, right? Because developments have happened.
We've never even talked about Ukraine and Russia, though. So
I know we wouldn't do that, but if we did, I'm just making a point that what if we had talked about mask mandates like the week
before they got rid of all the mandates?
Yeah, then it would have been
where we were complaining about the mask mandates, and
yeah.
Well, I just don't think we're that important. Can't we balance this with our own schedule? Like, can't we balance our commitment to our listener against our own commitment to self-care? What about self-care and it giving to others?
You also are just like, I can see you're just trying to pander to our fan who wants it to stay on Monday, so.
Yeah, well, we got two comments saying you can't ruin my Monday, and so I felt really bad, and I thought, why can't we juggle all of the competing interests?
We're thought leaders and influencers. We the fans respond to us, not us responding to the fans.
I mean,
they follow us where we go.
That's so funny. Okay, well, the thing that we were talking about before we broke the last take, is that what it's called when you do different takes? Like, you start something and it doesn't work, so you do it again?
Yeah.
I was saying that I enjoyed this tweet by Dale Partridge, which has been ratioed. It was advice for young people, and it was going, I saw it everywhere. Everybody I knew on Twitter was responding to this with their own list. His list was 10 things long, and I'll just read them. Advice for young people, skip college, learn a trade, get married young, join a small biblical church, have babies as soon as you can, homeschool your kids, catechize your kids, date your spouse, don't own a TV, go camping. And I thought that, we were in the middle of making our own list with a huge number.
We were disagreeing about whether that was a good idea. His list was a good idea. And
yeah,
I was, and you were like trying to make it into some kind of law. And I was pointing out that no, it's not a law. It's just advice.
I just think though, whenever you say, hey, this is just advice, you should do this. What it does is send somebody into paroxysms of angst where they actually try to do whatever it is that you're suggesting that they do, and maybe they shouldn't, because how would you know what they should do? Everybody turns advice into a law. That's the whole point of it, doing it. So I don't think people should give advice. I'm against advice giving. My advice is not to give advice like that.
In Lord of the Rings, elves don't give advice.
Oh, really?
They don't like to give advice. They say they very rarely give advice. But then sometimes they do.
Oh, so, okay, well, so, I was going to say
that. But I think it's wrong. I think we should give advice. I think people deserve our wisdom. They need our wisdom. They need the wisdom of,
Of
having lived through 50 years Or you haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, no, I haven't. I don't have that kind of wisdom. So that's great for me. Well, so I was saying my own list, number one would be go to a small liturgical, biblically friendly church.
Why is it that small? And what do you mean by small?
I mean, like under 1,000 people. Oh. Don't go to a mega church with a screen. I mean, if you want to, though, that's fine. Do whatever you want. Like, if you want to go to a church with a screen that's 2,000 people, you should do that. Who am I? I prefer small churches where I can, you know, if people talk about wanting to live in community and be held accountable to other people and like have human relationships, but nobody really wants that. And a small church definitely gives you that. And so you probably should go to a big mega church. So you just have to deal with
that. Pop in and pop out.
Yeah.
Unseen.
If nobody knows you, then they cannot possibly give you any advice. And so that would be better for you. But we were also in a more interesting discussion of what kind of job should you have. So I don't think you should say to all the young people of the world, don't go to college. Many people shouldn't bother to go to college, but some people should. Even if the system's broken, like some people should go to college. A person with an MA, an MDiv, shouldn't tell all the young people not to go to college. That's what's that called? There's a word for that.
But I was pointing out in our previous take, whatever, that you and I went through college at a time when it was assumed that, hey, you get a college degree, you're going to get a good job. It doesn't matter what your college degree is in. So you can take history, you can take, you know,
comparative literature,
and you can pretty much assume that you're going to get out and be able to find some kind of job.
But that was already dying by the time I graduated. Everybody, I either had to go to get a graduate degree in comparative literature.
And get a PhD. Or I'm glad you didn't do that.
Work at McDonald's, like people were saying.
What kind of person would you be if you had a PhD in?
Well, I can describe what kind of person I would have been because I knew all of them. I was having to take classes with all the graduate students in comparative literature, and a lot of them had like, they were all, because they were at Cornell, they were all very tortured, like angular. One woman's hands were like twisted whenever she would talk about, she's writing a doctorate on Rebecca West's Black Lamb, Gray Falcon, which is an amazing book, but like, do you have to write? I don't know. But when she would start to talk about it, her hands would twist around and like, she would breathe heavily. And like, I basically, it was from talking to her that I thought, I'm going to work at McDonald's. I would rather eat no, I didn't work at McDonald's, but I did have to go on. Like I was unemployable when I graduated from school in 1999. Yeah. I had to go on to another degree or I would have done fire watch. I did that during college where I walked around a lumber mill with a hose looking for fires.
Well, I got
that's out of, what I was trying.
Right. Well, I got out of college and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I wasn't a Christian yet, and so I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm going to go to college, get a history degree, and then go to seminary and be a pastor. I was thinking, I'm going to go to college and get a history degree because I really like history, and then I'm going to come out and do something.
Like what?
I had no idea.
What am I going to do? No one knows what anyone's going to do.
Like mid college, like my sophomore year, I thought, okay, maybe I'll join the army for 4 years and be a officer because you can just go into the army after college. You get commissioned, but it turns out that's not right. That's not true. You actually go in as a
grunt.
It's a grunt, unless you've gone through ROTC or you, I don't know, work it so you can go to officer training school, which I didn't do. So I couldn't do that. So, I mean, I couldn't do it full time. I couldn't do it, like, I didn't want to go in all the time for 4 years as a grunt. I wanted to do National Guard as a grunt.
So you just do a little bit on the weekends.
Yeah, which I did. Well, no, but I had extensive training for grunts. I had extensive grunt training. I went to basic training and AIT and airborne school.
And so in terms of, but that didn't prepare you for your current life either. Because
it had no.
You learned to do a bunch of stuff that you don't do at all now.
If anyone wants small unit tactics, advancing on an enemy position from.
Why couldn't the army?
I can tell them how to do that.
Like,
I can't lead it because I'm not an officer, but I can tell them how to do it.
Why couldn't the army have taught you how to do some electrical work or like build something out of wood or like make a house?
Because I was in an infantry unit. I was and jumping out of airplanes, which is totally useful. It's useful. But it was useful in life experience.
Yeah, I mean, we all have to jump out of an airplane.
Then it teaches you courage, and also that if you're in a line of people jumping out of an airplane, you have no choice but to jump.
That's so helpful. Okay, well, but the calculation.
Don't get in a line for ready to get out of an airplane, because you won't be able to.
You won't be able to
get out of it.
Well, I feel like that's
good life advice.
That is a really good life. That should have been one of the 10. Like the hubris, is that the word I'm looking for, of people like us who went to college? Because that's just what you did. The conversations that we're having with our children are 100% different than the conversations that anybody had with us. So you were saying that we're reverting back to economic man is what we're doing.
You and me.
Yeah.
Not the culture.
Not the culture, but some parts of the culture. Like, I think that this list of things, this guy is trying to say to young people, hey, go back and be economic man. Don't be therapeutic weirdo person.
Genderless. The reason we said that is because you, looking at this list, had some advice about, this guy said, don't go to college, get a trade, do that. Which now we're so lacking in tradesmen and women that you could make a lot of money.
I know. I've been telling our children, would one of you please
go to trade school
for the love of God? Become a plumber.
We could
use because when like, we seriously, it's a, and electricians, because when we want to call, there are not enough people. When you call, you have to wait a month to get anybody to come do anything. And we are so handy because when we learned important life skills as a result of we can't do anything. So it would be so great, but our children, because of the way the Lord hath placed them in our family structure, look at us and think, I'm not going to become a plumber. Like, I would like to sit in a chair and type on the computer a lot of the day.
Well, you were saying do something that gets money. I was pointing out that the advice that you were saying, like if you go to college but do something that would get you money, whether you like it or not, you said.
Yes.
Whether you enjoy your job or not, you should do it.
You should do it.
And I was pointing out that was a classic. You are reverting back to economic man using Carl Schumann's categories in The Rise and Fall of the Bible itself.
Yes.
The economic man is someone who finds, so our grandfathers were. If you would have asked them, like, do you find your job satisfactory? Are you happy in your job? They would have thought, well, first of all, they may not have even understood the question.
I mean, I want to quibble with him a little bit because both of my grandfathers were missionary pastors. And that set them, I think, they cast it in spiritual terms, though. Like, am I serving the Lord? And I know that my one grandfather did a lot of work that he didn't enjoy because he had to feed his family. If you had asked him if he enjoyed his job, he would have said, no, I hate that I'm doing this, but I have 8 children and I have to get food on the table. But he did it. He didn't really complain about it either.
Truman was saying his grandfather, who was like a sheet metal worker in Suffolk or something like that, in England or Scotland, I don't know where it is. some place sounds English.
I love the amount of education that we've had. Yeah. And we're like, I don't know where that is. It's somewhere over
anyway,
there.
Anyway, but if you had asked my grandfather this, he had no idea what you're talking about, probably. And if he did, to answer it, he would answer it in terms of what he was getting from his job. Like, okay, well, I'm getting enough money to feed my kids.
Yeah.
I'm able to make a living. And so I'm totally happy with this job. Whereas now, if you ask the same question, invariably people think, do I find meaning in my task, in my daily task? Do I?
And the meaning that you find isn't related to the money that you like.
No, it's like
it's interesting, right? Because I would say though that if you are earning money, money is valuable, and you should find some kind of like
right. But that's
classic. Happiness. But that is economic. Right? Yeah.
The psychological man doesn't think that way. He thinks, well, am I? This is the last. Truman says we're living in an era of psychological man, in which the category for what gives a person identity and meaning is found within rather than in the external things of life, your job, your church, your village. It's found in your own inner sense of
happiness.
And so and everything is in our culture has been reconstructed around this idea that the inner self is the authentic self that needs to be somehow find meaning in the things around it, us. So like you're saying, like a psychological man or woman,
person,
right. It's really important that that person finds a job where he or she feels
important while doing the job.
Yeah, resonates with the inner self.
Yeah. So what's so funny about that is ironical is that many of the jobs that psychological persons have to do now are driving Ubers around and doing Instacart. Yeah. And there's no way to feel happy while you're filling up somebody else's grocery cart and then putting it all on their porch and backing away.
But like, I think that's why this advice is there. Like, go get a trade, do a trade.
Like, so that don't have to do Instacart.
Yeah. Like, so I think, okay, I used to love my grandfather's garage. Like he worked with an oil company in Texas for his whole career. He hated it. It wasn't the job he liked. He was analyzing ground for wells. And he didn't get paid a lot, but he got paid enough. But then when he retired at 65, like we all did.
Yeah,
he literally got a golden watch. And then he set up in his garage. He set up a wood shop, and he just made, you know, not to make furniture so much as to make, you know, things that people might buy at a market, like people's names and etched out in wood. Or he used to make me swords all the time, and or little guns with the wood.
But, that's really really shocking.
Yeah. It was fun, but he loved it. You know, and I think that if he could have done that his whole life,
and fed his family,
he would have chosen that, right? But I look back at that and I think, oh wow, if I weren't a pastor,
yeah. And the thing is, yeah, no, I mean, you're the bread truck fantasy.
Yeah, well, no, if I weren't a but that I really enjoy working with wood. I enjoy it. I'm bad at it, but I enjoy it.
Yeah.
So. I mean, I can see this advice being really good for people. Go get a job that you...
Well, I mean, does the plumber really enjoy his job? Like, not all the trades are making little guns out of wood. Like, a lot of the trades are digging out somebody's sewer in sub-zero temperatures. Huh. That's not... Where do you find the meaning in that? Like, your soul's comfort.
I don't know. We know plenty of contractors who love their job. In fact, I don't know a contractor who doesn't love his job.
That's true.
I mean, every contractor at our church enjoys the work, even the dirty work like that.
Yeah.
I think of one guy who just builds houses like from ground up, and he's
a very happy person.
He fixed our sewage issue.
Yeah.
Like our sewer we were going to the upstairs third floor bathroom had a leak in the drain pipe. That is the pipe that
the 100-year-old drain
sewage out. And we didn't know it, and so until like over the course of several weeks, we noticed that there was a strange smell emanating from one of our walls. And so this person came and fixed it.
It's just you can't say here. I don't agree with the. I do think more people should consider more of the options. But you shouldn't say to a whole generation of people, just do this, you know, because that was the problem. That's always the problem when you just try to shove everybody into one bucket and say, well, you extremely bright child who can do maths in your head, why don't you go be a plumber? Like, no, that person should go to a college.
Well, right, but that's always
solve nuclear problems.
Okay, but that's how society was set up during the Economic Man era, wasn't it? I mean, it's like most people grew up and did some kind of trade, mm-hmm. and then the really smart people went to college, got the degree, and maybe an advanced degree.
But not everybody had to do that. Yeah.
But not everyone had to do that.
Something disappeared out of my head. I can't remember what it was. Oh yeah. I know you love it when I bring this up, but you're finally reading Carl Truman after I raved about the book forever, and you were like, yeah. And then you finally, now you're trying to explain to me how good the book is. And I was the one who said that. I understood that it was good before, but what I have really, really appreciated about Christopher Lash is his discussions about the destruction of work that shift. If you want more details and more emotional landscape drawn out in the shift from economic man to psychological person, spelled with a Y, whatever, read Lash's about how work has been destroyed. That's part of the reason we have such deep unhappiness in people, is that meaningful work was put beyond the reach of many ordinary people. And so McDonald's was a job that is a job that some people have to working at McDonald's. Like that is a soul. Instacart is a soulless job. There's no way to find meaning in that other than lifting your eyes to Jesus and praying for.
Well, again, we're blending together the two types of.
But they, person, right? But there was a, you know, the changeover from one. There were reasons why one generation of people thought about it one way, and then their grandchildren thought about it another way, and the passage through that has been uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And the changing idea about what the human person is for has been unmooring, like difficult. So can, you know, this person on Twitter thinks you can go back. Well, just get married young. Just homeschool your kids, I don't think everyone should homeschool their kids. Like, some people should homeschool their kids.
I disagree with you about
not
that.
Not everybody can, or...
I mean, I think if you can afford to do... So if you can afford to put your kid in a private school, or make sure, or find a really, really good public school and move there and put your kid there.
But yeah, but that's beyond the reach of many people.
Yeah.
So it's a very difficult thing to say to everyone, and it's true. The school systems are broken. What are you going to do if you have children now? What kind of job can you even have? The whole system is crumbling. So for this person to come along and say, well, just do this.
Well, I mean, but it makes, if you can do it though, like I do think it's right. If you can get your kids out of the public school system, do it, because in not every public school, but in a lot of public schools, it's like basically a indoctrination. I mean, when I was a kid in high school, sex education was, here's how the equipment works. Now it's not only here's how the equipment works, but here's how to, you know, to satisfy yourself, to find out what turns you on. I mean, really, that's put in various curricula, helping kids have quote unquote psychologically healthy sexual experiences by showing them how, or giving them options out there. And it's just crazy. I don't want my kid in there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're right. It hurts poorer families because they can't afford to go send their kids to private school, or put them in charter school, or put them in a classical school. And so they're just exposed to this stuff. Or just the basic assumption of woke values being just shoved down our kids' throats in public school. I mean, my goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, not every public school, but like it's widespread enough that it's good advice.
If it is only advice and you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do finally agree with the camping one. I do think everyone should go camping. That is a universal, that could be made into a law, I think, without any trouble, where the whole world, everyone should camp with their 15 children that they homeschool. There's no
question. Why do you say that?
I mean, I do love camping, and I think that I should make my personal preference into the standard for humankind. I like camping, and so everyone else must also love camping. That's how this works.
One of our assistants at church thinks that this is crazy.
What?
That we go camping.
Why?
Because he thinks it's so uncomfortable and such a lot of work just to go out there and sleep in a tent.
It's because we don't know a trade, but we can gather firewood and like put our tent up. It makes us feel like we have meaning.
We're one with nature.
We can
cook really nice meals out.
Yeah, I love cooking over a fire.
In nature.
Surrounded by other
campers and
I do wish that we could afford to camp where there are no other people. Like whenever we camp, there's like millions of other people there with their big houses that they drive up. They drive up a big house with a lot of lights and loud rock music. That's kind of our that's our economic man level. So, well, did you have any other advice?
The problem with cutting off. Did you read this one to our?
I read this one.
On this tape?
Yeah, I read it.
Okay.
Well, again, I do think a lot of people should get married younger.
We told people to do that.
Well, that's true. You should do
it. Catechize your kids. That's all good advice. Don't own a TV. That's great advice.
We own a TV.
Huh?
We don't
watch TV.
We watch our phones.
We watch our phones.
Don't own a TV. That's like saying...
We don't own it. We own a TV, but we had, except for maybe a long time ago when I used to watch football, we never watch TV on it. We watch Netflix on it, or
that's Amazon. What does this person mean, that you don't consume media? Because we definitely do that. That's what I think. Like, is he say cancel your Netflix and Prime subscriptions? Like, because we haven't done that. We totally participate.
I don't think he means that.
I feel like that's probably what he means. He's not specific enough.
That's inhuman.
What's interesting about this tweet and the ratio is that a lot of people are really angry that he would say these things. Yeah. That's
right.
Saying them out loud is shocking to psychological persons, mm-hmm, spelled with a Y. Mm-hmm. People don't want to be told maybe to go to church or to get married and have a family. I do love the parodies though. They're really good.
I was reading this article about this weird BuzzFeed, not weird. I guess it's more indicative of how the culture is going. This BuzzFeed article someone sent me this morning talking about the show Euphoria, which I haven't seen. I'm not going to see, that portrays all the dysfunctions of drug abuse and, you know, just wild, commitmentless sexual activity as stemming from the nuclear family. And if but the BuzzFeed article saying, it's such a wonderful thing. This show is showing that. And because the nuclear family is the source of racism and transphobia and hatred of LGBTQ people. So we need to, it's a bad, the nuclear family is a bad thing, and we need to get rid of it. And so it's on BuzzFeed. I mean, it's a pretty popular website.
It's taken a hit. Like, they've had to fire tons and tons and tons of their people. Yeah.
Why?
Well, because they took a sharp turn to the left and stop doing just kitten listicles. And
right.
I think they had to fire a bunch of staff writers who were then unemployed millennial or Gen Z BuzzFeed writers. That was the kind of learn to code.
Well, this article is like not mocking the idea that parents have a right to have their kids not go to the bathroom with like if you have a daughter and you don't want your daughter to go to the bathroom with a man with a hairy chest and an apple, Adam's apple, and who goes in there and just starts, you know, doing whatever he's going to do, then you know, that's because you want, that's why the nuclear family needs to go. Because the nuclear family is training little girls not to want to have bathroom experiences with adult men or even young men. I don't care. And parents don't have the right to stop that from happening. They shouldn't have the right to stop that from happening.
Parents. The article was full of so many contradictory ideas that if you had one of those ideas, you couldn't have the one that came next to it. Right. Like it was just this sort of screed. I tried to read it, but it was so confusing.
Yeah.
Well, I just found this. Here, somebody responded to the listicle, the Dale Partridge listicle, with their own list, and this is pretty telling. Shall I read this one, and then we can go on with our lives? This person said, go to college, learn a trade, because everybody has time to do both of those things. Get married if you want to. I feel like that's probably okay, sure. But number four, go to church if you want to. No. Go to church.
Right.
Go to church.
If you want to.
Okay, have babies when you're financially stable. See, and there's the problem. No one can be financially stable, but when you marry someone and you have children and you do the same job for a long time, you gain financial stability.
Right.
Like, and your idea of financial stability that's required for children is probably not actually, like, you can have children at a much cheaper rate than you probably think you can. Okay. Six, educate your children. Well, yes. Seven, accept your kids' views on religion. Yeah, so educating your child means that you teach them the faith. And I mean, if your 40-year-old comes home and is like, I'm Buddhist now, I'm not going to...
Oh, wonderful, sweetheart.
Well, I'm not going to be like, well, no, you know, I'm going to have no relationship with you at all. But I'm not going to be like, oh, I accept you, you know, what? Anyway.
Why are you choosing a religion that will take you to hell? Why are you choosing a demonic faith?
Okay, eight. Here's another insane one. Love your spouse and yourself. Okay, so in number eight, you blow the whole thing up because self-love is contrary to everything else. If you want to have a spouse and children and a life, your self-love, as probably understood by this person, is going to be the thing that just blows it up.
But sweetheart, if you don't love yourself, you can't love anyone else. If you're not happy.
I know.
If you're not,
I know, that's the whoopee guard.
Then your children will be happy.
Yeah.
And if your children aren't, I mean, they need to see you being happy.
Yep. Because your children are deeply care at all about your feelings as you go through your life.
Sweetheart, we're going to get a divorce because we're both going to be happier. Your mommy and daddy are both going to be happier, and that will make you happy.
Yeah.
Because we're so happy.
Said every person in every child's life was destroyed. And so then number nine, watch TV if you like. I mean, okay, sure. 10, enjoy life. Now, they're also, if you, that shouldn't be on there because you can't possibly do that, especially if you have number eight, which is love yourself. If you're going to love yourself, you are not going to enjoy your life.
Right.
Those things are mutually exclusive. So, but that's sort of standard fare for the responses to this tweet. And that's the division. That's the fault line is, I would say, not economic man and therapeutic person so much as adopt the prevailing cultural ideal of love, which is centered completely and totally in the self. Because that is what produces your self-identity.
But that is the psychological man.
Yeah.
That's true. What he's saying.
If you do that, then you will not be happy forever.
Right.
So we should all go back to Religious Man. Wasn't that one of them?
Yeah, that was like the example of that was the Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, where there's just different people from different walks of life heading to Canterbury for the pilgrimage. And
yeah.
And they people found their identity in the religious structure of the day. I mean, your whole life was geared around the liturgical calendar. And the bells ring in the village church for morning prayer and evening prayer.
I mean, I think that we've managed to do that with our children. We've done the religious man option because we have totally structured our lives around the church. And everything gives way to the church calendar, everything. Yeah. And the weekly church life. And school is second to that.
Yeah.
Family dinner is second to that. Everything is.
Yeah.
So that's our advice. Find a small liturgical church that loves the Bible. And then go to it.
Right. I mean, right.
There it is.
I drive by it every day.
I'm going to go to this other thing over here. I don't know what it is. Okay, well, now we have to go, and I do hope that our listener is happy that we did this on a Monday. Why are you looking at me like that? You know,
I'm saying yes.
Okay.
I'm hoping that.
I hope we get points. Is what I'm saying.
I think we'll get points.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening, and maybe we'll be back next week.